Several hours later, Vivenna still sat alone, a solitary candle burning and dripping wax onto the splintered desk corner. She had long since stopped reading. A plate of food sat uneaten by the door brought by Parlin some time before. Letters lay spread out on the desk before her. It had taken time to put them in order. Most were penned in her father's familiar hand. Not the hand of her father's scribe, her father's own hand. That had been her first clue. He only wrote his most personal or most secret communications on his own. Vivenna kept her hair under control. She didn't look out the darkened window at the lights of a city that should have been asleep. She simply sat, numb. The final letter,
the last before Lemek's death, sat on the top of the pile. It was only a few weeks old.
My friend, our conversations have worried me more than I care to admit. I have spoken with Yarda at length. We can see no solution. War is coming. We all know that now. The continued and increasingly vigorous arguments in the Court of Gods show a disturbing trend. The money we sent to buy you enough breath to attend those meetings is some of the best I've ever spent. All signs point to the inevitability of Halandran lifeless marching to our mountains. Therefore, I give you leave to do as we have discussed. Any disruptions you can cause in the city, any delays you can earn us, will be extremely valuable. The additional funds you requested should have arrived by now. My friend, I must admit a weakness in myself. I will never be able to send Vivenna to be a hostage in that dragon's nest of a city. To send her would be to kill her, and I cannot do that. Even though I know it would be best for Idris if I did, I'm not yet sure what I will do. I will not send her, for I love her too much. However, breaking the treaty would bring the Halandran wrath against my people even more quickly. I fear I may have to make a very difficult decision in the days to come. But that is the essence of a king's duty. Until we correspond again, Dedalyn, your liege and your friend.
Vivenna looked away from the letter. She wanted to scream at the letter and her father who was now so far away. And yet she could not. She had been trained for better. Tantrums were useless displays of arrogance. Don't draw attention to yourself. Don't set yourself above others. He who makes himself high will be cast down low. But what of the man who murders one of his daughters to save the other? What of the man who claims to your face that the switch was for other reasons? That it was for the good of Idris? That it wasn't about favoritism at all? What of the king who betrayed the highest tenets of his religion by purchasing breath for one of his spies? Vivenna blinked at a tear in her eye, then gritted her teeth, angry at herself and the world. Her father was supposed to be a good man, the perfect king, wise and knowing, always sure of himself, and always right in that surety. The man she saw in these letters was far more human. Why should she be so shocked to learn that?
It doesn't matter. None of that matters.
Factions in the Halandran government were rallying the nation for war. Reading her father's candid words, she finally believed him completely. Halandran troops would likely march on her homeland before the year was out. And then, the Halandran, so colorful yet so deceptive, would hold Ciri hostage and threaten to kill her unless Dedalyn surrendered. Her father would not give up his kingdom. Ciri would be executed.
And that is what I'm here to stop.
Vivenna's hands grew tighter, gripping the edges of the desktop jaw set. She brushed away the traitorous tear. She had been trained to be strong, even when surrounded by an unfamiliar city and its people. She had work to do. She made her way down the stairs, avoiding the broken steps, to where the mercenaries were teaching Parlin how to play a game with wooden cards. The three men looked up as Vivenna approached. She settled herself carefully on the floor, sitting with her legs beneath her in an unassuming posture.
I know where some of Lemek's money came from. Idris and Halandran will soon go to war. Because of this threat, my father gave much greater resources to Lemek's than I'd realized. He'd sent enough money for Lemek's to buy 50 breaths, allowing him to enter the court and report on its proceedings. Obviously, my father didn't know that Lemix already had a sizable amount of breath.
The three men were silent. Tonk Fa shot a glance at Denth, who sat back, resting against an overturned broken chair.
I believe that Lemix was still loyal to Idris. His personal writings make that relatively clear. He was not a traitor. He was simply greedy. He wanted as much breath as possible because he had heard that it extended a person's life. Lemix and my father had planned to hinder the war preparations from inside Halandrin. Lemix promised he would find a way to sabotage the lifeless armies, damage the city's supplies, and generally undermine the ability to wage war. For him to accomplish this, my father sent him a large sum of money.
About 5,000 marks worth?
Less than that, but a large chunk nonetheless. I believe that you are right about Lemix, Denth. He's been stealing from the crown for some time.
Parlin looked confused. That wasn't uncommon. The mercenaries, however, didn't look surprised.
I don't know if Lemix intended to do as my father asked. The way he hid the money, some of the things he wrote, well, maybe he was finally planning to turn traitor and run. We can't know what he would eventually have decided. We do, however, have a vague list of things he planned to accomplish. Those plans were convincing enough to persuade my father, and the urgency of his letters has convinced me. We are going to continue Lemix's work and undermine Halandrin's ability to wage war.
Your sister?
We will get her out. Her rescue and safety is our first priority.
That is all easier discussed than accomplished, Princess.
I know.
Well, better get back to work then.
Denth nodded at Tonk Fa.
Always with the working.
Wait, what?
I figured once you saw those papers, you'd want to continue. Now that I've seen what he was up to, I can piece together why he had us do some of the things we were involved in. One of those was to contact and support some rebellious factions here in the city, including one that was stamped out just a few weeks back. Cult of Disaffection. Centered on a guy named Vahir.
Always wondered why Lemix gave him support.
That faction's dead, along with Vahir himself. But a lot of his followers are still around, waiting for trouble to come their way. We can contact them. And there are a few other leads I think we can look into. Things Lemix didn't explain completely, but which I might be able to figure out.
And you can handle something like this? You just said it wouldn't be easy.
Won't be. But if you haven't realised it yet, this kind of thing is why Lemix hired us in the first place. Men like him don't ordinarily need a team of free high-priced specialist mercenaries. We're not exactly the type of men you keep around to serve your tea.
Unless you want the tea rammed up someplace uncomfortable.
Three mercenaries. That's right. There's another one. A woman. Where's the other member of your team?
Jules, you'll meet her soon enough.
Unfortunately.
So for now, let us go back out and see how things stand on our projects. Gather what you want from this house. We'll move out tomorrow.
Move out?
Unless you want to sleep on a mattress Tong Fa ripped into five pieces. He has a thing about mattresses.
And chairs. And tables and doors and walls, actually. Oh, and people.
Either way, Princess, this building was well known to people who worked with Lemix. As you've discovered, he wasn't exactly the most honest fellow around. I doubt you want the baggage that comes with being associated with him.
Best to move to another house.
We'll try not to break up the next one quite so badly.
No promises, though.
And then the two left. Ciri stood before the door to her husband's bedchamber, shuffling nervously. As usual, Bluefinger stood beside her, and he was the only other one in the hallway. He scribbled on his pad, giving no indication how he always knew when it was time for her to enter. For once, she didn't mind the delay, nervous though she was. It gave her more time to think about what she was going to do. The day's events still buzzed about in her head. Trilides telling her that she needed to provide an heir. Lightsong the Bold, talking in circles, then leaving her with what had seemed like a heartfelt farewell. Her king and husband sitting on his tower above, bending light around him. The priests below, arguing about whether or not to invade her homeland. A lot of people wanted to push her in different directions, Yet none of them were really willing to tell her how to do what they wanted, and some didn't even bother to tell her what they wanted. The only thing they were accomplishing was annoying her. She was not a seductress. She had no idea how to make the God King desire her, particularly since she was terrified of him doing just that. High Priest Trilides had given her a command. Therefore, she intended to show him how she responded to commands, particularly when they had threats attached to them. Tonight, she would go into the king's bedchamber, sit down on the floor, and refuse to strip. She'd confront the God King. He didn't want her. Well, she was tired of being ogled every night. She intended to explain all this to him in no uncertain terms. If he wanted to see her naked again, he'd have to order servants to strip her. She doubted that he'd do that. He'd made no move toward her, and when he presided over the arena debates, he'd actually done no more than sit and watch. She was getting a new impression of this God King. He was a man with so much power, he had grown lazy. He was a man who had everything, and so he bothered with nothing. He was a man who expected others to do everything for him. People like him annoyed her. She was reminded of a guard captain in Idris who had insisted on making his men work hard while he spent his afternoons playing cards. It was time the God King was defied. More than that, it was time that his priests learned that they couldn't bully her. She was tired of being used. Tonight, she would react. That was her decision, and it made her nervous as all colors.
Do they really watch me each night?
Bluefingers glanced to either side, then shook his head.
But Trilides knew that I hadn't been bedded by the God King.
Bluefingers raised a finger, pointing to his eyes, then shook his head.
Then he pointed to his ears and nodded. He pointed to a doorway down the hall.
They listen.
They would never watch, Vessel. Remember, the God King is their holiest of deities. Seeing him nude? Watching him with his wife? No, they wouldn't dare. However, they aren't above listening.
They are very concerned about an heir.
Bluefingers glanced about nervously.
Am I really in danger from them?
More danger than you know, Vessel.
Then Bluefingers backed away, gesturing at the doorway.
You have to help me.
I cannot. Not now.
With that, Bluefingers pushed open the door, bowed, and scuttled away, glancing nervously over his shoulder. Ciri glared at him. The time was swiftly approaching when she'd need to corner him and find out what he really knew. Until then, she had other people to annoy. She turned and glanced into the dark room. Her nervousness returned.
Is this wise?
Being belligerent had never bothered her before. And yet, her life wasn't like it had been before. Bluefinger's fear had left her even more on edge. Defiance. It had always been her way to get attention. She hadn't been obstinate out of spite. She'd simply been unable to measure up to Vivenna, so she'd just done the opposite of what was expected of her. Her defiance had worked in the past, or had it? Her father had been perpetually angry at her, and Vivenna had always treated her like a child. The city's people had loved her, but sufferingly.
No, no, I can't go back to that. The people in this palace, this court, they aren't the types you can defy just because you're annoyed.
Spurn the palace priests and they wouldn't grumble at her like her father had. They'd show her what it really meant to be in their power. But what to do then? She couldn't keep throwing off her clothes and kneeling on the floor naked, could she? Feeling confused and a little angry at herself, she stepped into the dark room and pulled the door closed. The God King waited in his corner, shadowed as always. Ciri looked at him, staring at that too calm face. She knew that she should disrobe and kneel, but she didn't. Not because she felt defiant. Not even because she felt angry or petulant. Because she was tired of wondering. Who was this man who could rule gods and bend light with the force of his biochroma? Was he really just spoiled and indolent? He stared back at her. As before, he didn't grow angry at her insolence. Watching him, Ciri pulled at the strings of her dress, dropping the bulky garment to the floor. She reached for the shoulders of her shift, but hesitated.
No, this isn't right either.
Ciri glanced down at the shift. The edges of the white garment fuzzed, the white bending into color. She looked up at the God King's impassive face. Then, gritting her teeth against her nervousness, Ciri took a step forward. The God King tensed. She could see it in the edges of his eyes and around his lips. She took another step forward, the white of her garment bending further into prismatic colors. The God King didn't do anything. He just watched as she drew closer and closer. She stopped right in front of him. Then she turned from him and climbed up onto the bed, feeling the deep softness beneath her as she crawled to the middle of its mattress. She sat up on her knees, regarding the black marble wall with its obsidian sheen. The God King's priests waited just beyond, listening carefully to hear things that were really none of their business.
This is going to be exceptionally embarrassing. Oh.
She began to bounce up and down on the bed, making its springs creak. She hoped it was convincing. She didn't really know what it was supposed to sound like. And how long did it usually continue? Ciri's bouncing became more furious for what she assumed was a proper amount of time. Ciri fell back onto the bed. She glanced up, eyeing the God King. Some of his emotional mask had softened, and he displayed a very human look of confusion. She almost laughed out loud at how perplexed he seemed. She just met his eyes and shook her head. Then, her heart beating, her skin a bit sweaty, she lay back on the bed to rest. Tired from the day's events and intrigues, it wasn't long after that that she found herself rolled up in the luxurious comforter and relaxing. The God King left her alone. In fact, he'd grown tense at her approach, almost as if he were worried, even frightened of her. That couldn't be. He was the god and king of Halandrin, and she was just a silly girl, swimming in waters that were far over her head.
No, he wasn't frightened. The concept was enough to again make her feel like laughing.
She restrained herself, maintaining the illusion for the listening priests, as she drifted off in the luxurious comfort of the bed. The next morning, Lightsong did not get out of bed. His servants stood around the perimeter of his room like a flock of birds waiting for seed. As noon approached, they began to shuffle uncomfortably, shooting glances at one another. Lightsong remained in bed, staring up at the ornate red canopy. Some servants approached tentatively, placing a tray of food atop a small table beside him. Lightsong did not reach for it. He had dreamed of war again. Finally, a figure walked up to the bed. Large of girth and draped in his priestly robes, Larimar looked down at his god, betraying none of the annoyance that Lightsong was sure that he felt.
Leave us, please.
The servants hesitated, uncertain. When was a god without his servants?
Please.
Slowly, the servants filed from the room. Larimar moved the tray of food, then sat down on the edge of the low table. He studied Lightsong, expression thoughtful.
What did I ever do to earn a priest like this?
Lightsong knew many of the high priests of other returned, and most of them were various levels of insufferable. Some were quick to anger, others quick to point out fault, and still others were so fulsomely effusive toward their gods that it was downright maddening. Trilides, the God King's own high priest, was so stuck up that he made even gods feel inferior. And then there was Larimar. Patient, understanding. He deserved a better god.
All right, Your Grace. What is it this time?
I'm sick.
You can't get sick, Your Grace.
Larimar just rolled his eyes.
Oh, come on, Scoot. Can't you just play along a little bit?
Play along that you are sick? Your Grace, to do that would be to pretend that you're not a god. I do not believe that's a good precedent for your high priest to set.
It's the truth. I'm no god.
Please don't say such things, Your Grace. Even if you yourself do not believe, you should not say so.
Why not?
For the sake of the many who do believe.
And I should continue to deceive them.
It is no deception. It's not so uncommon for others to have more faith in someone than he has in himself.
And that doesn't strike you as a little odd in my case?
Not knowing your temperament, it doesn't. Now what brought this on?
Lightsong turned, looking up at the ceiling again.
Blushweaver wants my commands for the lifeless.
Yes.
She'll destroy that new queen of ours. Blushweaver worries that the Idrian royals are making a play for the Halandrin throne.
Do you disagree?
No, they probably are. But the thing is, I don't think the queen, knows that she's part of anything. I'm worried that Blushweaver will crush the child out of fear. I'm worried that she'll be too aggressive and get us all into a war when I don't know yet if that's the right thing to do.
It seems that you already have a good handle on all this, Your Grace.
I don't want to be a part of it, Scoot. I feel myself getting sucked in.
It is your duty to be involved in these things so that you can lead your kingdom. You can't avoid politics.
I can if I don't get out of bed.
You don't honestly believe that, do you, Your Grace?
Ugh, you're not going to give me a lecture about how even my inaction has political effects, are you?
Perhaps. Like it or not, you are a part of the workings of this kingdom, and you produce effects even if you stay in bed. If you do nothing, then the problems are as much your fault as if you had instigated them.
No. No, I think you're wrong. If I don't do anything, then at least I can't ruin things. Sure, I can let them go wrong, but that's not the same thing. It really isn't, no matter what people say.
And if by acting you could make things better?
Not going to happen. You know me better than that.
I do, Your Grace. I know you better, perhaps, than you think I do. You've always been one of the best men I have known.
Lightsong rolled his eyes, but then stopped, noting the expression on Larimar's face.
Best men I have known. You knew me! That's why you chose to be my priest. You did know me before I died. Who was I? A good man, you claim. What was it about me that made me a good man?
I can say nothing, Your Grace.
You've already said something. You might as well go on. No turning back.
I've said too much already.
Come on, just a little bit. Was I from Tatalir then? How did I die? Who is she? The woman I see in my dreams. I could command you to speak.
No, you couldn't. It's like the rain, Your Grace. You can say you want to command the weather to change, but you don't believe it deep down. It doesn't obey, and neither would I.
Convenient bit of theology, that. Particularly when you want to hide things from your gods.
Larimar turned to go.
You have paintings waiting to be judged, Your Grace. I suggest that you let your servants bathe and dress you so that you can get through the day's work.
How exactly did he just do that to me?
Larimar hadn't even really revealed anything. Yet Lightsong had overcome his bout of melancholy. He eyed Larimar as the priest reached the door and waved for the servants to return. Perhaps dealing with sullen deities was part of his job description.
But he knew me before, and now he's my priest. How did that happen? Scoot!
Larimar turned, guarded, obviously expecting Lightsong to pry further into his past.
What should I do? About Blushweaver and the Queen?
I cannot tell you, Your Grace. You see, it is from what you do that we learn. If I guide you, then we gain nothing.
Except perhaps the life of a young girl who is being used as a pawn.
Do your best, Your Grace. That is all I can suggest.
Great.
Lightsong didn't know what his best was. The truth was, he'd never bothered to find out.
This is nice.
Denth was carefully examining the house.
Strong wood paneling? Will break very cleanly.
Yeah.
Tung Fa opened one of the closet doors.
And he has plenty of storage. Bet we could fit a good half dozen bodies in here alone.
Favenna shot the two mercenaries a look.
The house wasn't as nice as Lemix had been. She didn't want to be ostentatious.
It was one of many that were built in a row along a well-maintained street. D deeper than it was wide, the building was bordered on either side with large palm trees, obscuring the view should someone try to spy from the neighboring buildings. She was pleased. Part of her balked at living in a home that was, despite being modest by Halandran standards, nearly as large as the king's palace back in Idris. However, she and Parlin had looked at and rejected cheaper sections of town. She didn't want to live in a place where she was afraid to go out at night, particularly since she worried that her breath might make her a target. Vivenna trailed down the stairs, the mercenaries following. The house had three stories: a small upper story with sleeping chambers, the main floor with a kitchen and sitting room, and a cellar for storage. The building was sparsely furnished, and Parlin had gone to the market to shop for more. She hadn't wanted to spend money on them, but Denth had pointed out that they must at least try to keep up appearances, lest they end up drawing even more attention.
Old Lemix's house will be taken care of soon. We left some hints in the underground mentioning that the old man was dead. Wherever we didn't ransack, a gang of burglars will take care of tonight. By tomorrow, the city watch will be there, and they'll assume that the place was burgled. The nurse has been paid off, and she never knew who Lemix really was anyway. When nobody comes to pay for the funeral services, the authorities will take the house in forfeit and have the body burned with other debtors.
That doesn't sound very respectful.
Well, what do you want to do? Go claim him at the charnel house yourself? Give him an Idrian ceremony?
Good way to get people asking questions, that.
Better to just let others deal with it.
I suppose. It just bothers me, letting his body be cared for by...
By what? Pagans?
The old man didn't seem to care much about heathen ways. Not with the number of breaths he held. Of course, didn't your daddy give him the money to buy them?
You hold those same breaths. You're not innocent in all of this.
Vivenna hadn't been given a choice. She could only hope and assume that her father had felt he was in a similar position. No choice but to do what seemed wrong. Lacking furniture, Vivenna arranged her dress and knelt on the wooden floor, hands in her lap. Denth and Tung Fa sat back against the wall, looking just as comfortable sitting on a hardwood floor as they were when lounging on plush chairs.
All right, Princess.
Denth unfolded a paper from his pocket.
We've got some plans for you.
Please, continue then.
First, we can get you a meeting with some of Vahir's allies.
Who exactly was this man?
Vahir was a worker in the dye fields. Things can get bad in those fields. Long hours, little more than food for pay. About 5 years back, Vahir got the bright idea that if he could convince enough of the other workers to give him their breath, he might be able to use the power to start a revolt against the overseers. Became enough of a hero to the people in the outer flower plantations that he actually drew the attention of the court of gods.
Never truly had a chance of starting a real rebellion.
So what good are his men to us if they never had a chance of succeeding?
Well, you didn't say anything about a rebellion or anything like that. You just want to make it tough for the Halandrans when they go to war.
Revolts in the field would sure be a pain during war.
All right, let's meet with them.
Just so you know, Princess, these aren't particularly sophisticated sort of folks.
I am not offended by poverty or people of small means. Us three regards all people equally.
Oh, I didn't mean that. It's not that they're peasants. It's that, well, when Vaya's little insurrection went bad, these are the people who were smart enough to get out quickly. That means they weren't all that committed to him in the first place.
In other words, they were really just a bunch of thugs and crime lords who thought Vahir might be the source of some easy influence and money.
And do we want to associate with people like that?
We have to start somewhere.
The other things on the list are a bit more fun.
And they are?
Raid the lifeless storage warehouse, for one. We won't be able to kill the things, not without drawing the rest of them down on us, but we might be able to muck up the way the creatures work.
That sounds a little dangerous.
Denth glanced at Tung Fa, who opened his eyes. They shared a smile.
What?
Hazard pay. We may not steal your money, but we have nothing against overcharging you for extremely dangerous stunts.
Great.
Beyond that, from what I can tell, Lemix wanted to undermine the city's food supply. It's a good idea, I suppose. Lifeless don't need to eat, but the humans who form the support structure of the army do. Disrupt supply, and perhaps people here will begin to worry if they can afford a long-term war.
That sounds more reasonable.
What did you come up with?
We raid merchant caravans, burn things up, cost them a bunch. We make it look like bandits or maybe even remnants of Vaya's supporters. That ought to confuse people in Taitalia and maybe make it more difficult for the priests to go to war.
Priests run a lot of trade in the city. They have all the money, so they tend to own the supplies. Burn away the stuff they intended to use for the war, and they'll be more hesitant to attack. It'll buy your people more time.
Your plans are a bit more violent than I had anticipated.
You see, this is where we get our bad reputation. People hire us to do difficult things like undermine a country's ability to wage war, then they complain that it's too violent.
Very unfair.
Perhaps you'd rather we buy puppies for all of our enemies, then send them with nice apologetic notes, asking them to stop being so mean.
And then when they don't stop, we could kill the puppies.
All right, I understand that we'll have to use a firm hand, but really, I don't want the Hallandrins to starve because of what we do.
Princess, these people want to attack your homeland. They see your family as the greatest existing threat to their power. And they're going to make certain that nobody of the royal blood lives to challenge them.
They get a child by your sister to be the next God King, then they kill every other person of royal blood. They never have to worry about you again.
Your father and Lemix were right. The Hallandrin have everything to lose by not attacking you. And from what I can see, your people are going to need every bit of help you can give them. That means doing everything we can. Scaring the priests, breaking their supply reserves, weakening their enemies, you know, to help out.
We can't stop the war. We can just make the fight a little more fair.
All right, then. We'll...
Havena looked up. A figure stood in the doorway. A tall, bulky man with unusually large muscles and flat features. It took her a moment to register the other oddity about him. His skin was gray, his eyes too. There was no color to him at all, and her heightenings told her that he didn't have a single breath. A lifeless soldier. Havena scrambled to her feet. She backed away from the large soldier. He just stood there, immobile, not even breathing. Its eyes tracked her. They didn't just stare ahead like those of a dead man. For some reason, she found that the most unnerving.
Denf! What are you doing? Attack!
The mercenaries remained where they were, lounging on the floor.
Ah, well, looks like we've been discovered by the City Watch.
Pity. This was looking like it would be a fun job.
Nothing but execution for us now.
Attack! You're my bodyguards! You're... What? Some kind of joke? Did you paint that man grey? What's going on?
Move it, you rock on legs.
The creature walked into the room, carrying a couple of canvas bags over its shoulders. As it entered, it revealed a shorter woman standing behind. Thick through the thighs and through the bust, she had light brown hair that came down to her shoulders. She stood with hands on hips, looking upset.
Den, he's here. In the city.
Good. I owe that man a sword through the gut.
He killed Arstia. What makes you think you can beat him?
I've always been the better swordsman.
Arstia was good too. Now he's dead. Who's the woman?
New employer.
Hope she lives longer than the last one. Claude, put those down. Go get the other bag.
The lifeless responded, setting down his bags, then walking back out. Havena watched, by now having figured out that the short woman must be Jules, the third member of Denth's team. What was she doing with the lifeless? And how had she found the new house? Denth must have sent her a message.
What's wrong with you? Some awakener to come by and steal your colors?
What?
She means, why do you look so surprised?
That and her hair's white.
Havena flushed, realizing that her shock had gotten the better of her. She returned her hair to its proper dark color. The lifeless was returning, carrying another bag.
Where did that creature come from?
What, Claude? Made him from a dead body, obviously. I didn't do it myself. I paid money for someone else to.
Too much money.
He wasn't unnaturally tall, not like a returned. He could have been a normal, if well-muscled, man. Only the skin coloring, mixed with the emotionless face, was different.
She bought him? When? Just now?
Nah, we've had Claude for months.
It's useful to have a lifeless around.
And... you didn't tell me about this?
The topic never came up. They're pretty common in Taitalia.
We were just talking about defeating these things, not embracing them.
We talked about defeating some of them. Princess, lifeless are like swords. They're tools. We can't destroy all of them in the city, nor would we want to. Just the ones being used by your enemies.
Vivenna slid down, sitting on the wooden floor. The lifeless set down its final bag, then Jules pointed toward the corner. It walked over and stood there, patiently waiting for further orders.
Here.
Jules untied the final large bag.
You wanted these.
Jules turned the bag on its side, exposing glittering metal shining within. Denth smiled, rising. Denth kicked Tonk far back awake. The large man had an uncanny ability to fall asleep at a moment's notice, and walked over to the bag. He pulled out several swords, shiny and new-looking with long, thin blades. Denth made a few practice swings, while Tonk Fa wandered over, pulling out wicked-looking daggers, some shorter swords, and then some leather jerkins. Vivenna sat back against the wall. She tried not to feel threatened by the lifeless in the corner. How could they just go about ignoring it like that? It was so unnatural that it made her itch and squirm. Eventually, Denth noticed her.
That lifeless is going to be a problem, Princess.
Yes.
Then we'll need to work it out. My team can't function if you tie our hands. Jules has invested a lot of effort into learning the proper commands to use a lifeless, not to mention learning to maintain the thing.
We don't need her.
Yes, yes, we do. Princess, you've brought a lot of biases into the city. It's not my place to tell you what to do with them. I'm just your employee. But I will tell you that you don't know half the things you think you do.
It's not about what I think I know, Denth. It's what I believe. A person's body shouldn't be abused by making it come back to life and serve you.
Why not? Your own theology says a soul leaves when a body dies. The corpse is just recycled dirt. Why not use it?
It's wrong.
The family of the corpse was well paid for the body.
Doesn't matter.
Oh, well, fine then. But if you order Jules away, you order us all away. I'll give your money back, then we'll go hire you another team of bodyguards. You can use them instead.
I thought you were my employee.
I am, but I can quit whenever I want. Your father was willing to use means that he didn't agree with. Judge him if you must, but tell me this. If using a lifeless could save your kingdom, who are you to ignore the opportunity?
Why do you care?
I just don't like leaving things unfinished. Look at it this way, Princess. You can work with us, which will give you a chance to explain your views, maybe change our minds on things like lifeless and biochroma, or you can send us away. But if you reject us because of our sins, aren't you being ostentatious? Don't the five visions say something about that?
How does he know so much about ostracism?
I'll think about it. Why did Jules bring all those swords?
Oh, we'll need weapons. You know, has to do with that violence thing we mentioned earlier.
You don't have any already?
Tonk usually has a cudgel or knife on him, but a full sword draws attention in Taitalia. It's best not to stand out sometimes. Your people have some interesting wisdom in that area.
But no.
Now we don't really have a choice. If we keep moving forward with Lemix's plans, things are going to get dangerous. Ooh, which reminds me, I have something else for you to think about.
What?
Those breaths you hold, they're a tool, just like the lifeless. Now, I know you don't agree with how they were obtained, but the fact is, you have them. If a dozen slaves die to forge a sword, does it do any good to melt down the sword and refuse to use it? Or is it better to use that sword and try to stop the men who did such evil in the first place?
What are you saying?
You should learn to use the breaths. Tonks and I sure could use an awakener backing us up.
Vivenna closed her eyes. Did he have to hit her with that now, right after twisting around her concerns about the lifeless? She had expected to find uncertainties and obstacles in Taitalir. She just hadn't expected so many difficult decisions, and she hadn't expected them to endanger her soul.
I'm not going to become an awakener, Denth. I might turn a blind eye toward that lifeless for now, but I will not awaken. I expect to take these breaths to my death so that nobody else can benefit from harvesting them. No matter what you say, if you buy that sword forged by overworked slaves, then you'll just encourage the evil merchants.
You're the boss. It's your kingdom. If we fail, the only thing I lose is an employer.
Oh, Dent, I don't like this. I don't like the fact that he got here first. He has breath. Reports say he looked to have reached at least the fourth heightening, maybe the fifth. I'll bet he got it from that rebel Vahir.
How do you even know it's him?
Psst! Words all over. People being found slaughtered in alleyways. The wounds corrupt and black. Sightings of a new, powerful awakener roaming the city, carrying a black-handled sword in a silver sheath. Huh, it's Tax, all right. Goes by a different name now.
Vasha. He's used it for a while. It's a joke on his part.
Black-handled sword, silver sheath. The man at the arena? Who are we talking about?
Old friend of ours.
He's bad trouble. Tax tends to leave a lot of bodies in his wake. Has strange motivation. Doesn't think like other people.
He's interested in the war for some reason, Dent.
Let him be. That'll just bring him across my path all the sooner.
Dent turned away, waving a hand indifferently. Vivenna watched him go, noting the frustration in his step, the curtness of his motions.
What is wrong with him?
Tax, or I guess Vasha. He killed a good friend of ours over in Yarn Dread a couple months back. Dent used to have four people in his team.
It shouldn't have happened. Arsteel was a brilliant duelist, almost as good as Dent. Vasha's never been able to beat either of them.
He used that sword of his.
There was no blackness around the wound.
Then he cut the blackness out.
Tungfar watched Dent belt a sword to his waist.
There's no way Vasha beat Arsteel in a fair duel. No way!
This Vasha, I saw him.
Jules and Tungfar turned sharply.
He was at the court yesterday. Tall man, carrying a sword when nobody else did. It had a black hilt and a silver sheath. He looked ragged. Hair unkempt, beard scraggly, clothing ripped in places. Only a rope for a belt. He was watching me from behind. He looked dangerous.
Cowards.
That's him, Dent. He's a step ahead of us. Been tailing your princess here. She saw him watching her at the court.
Colors, 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 colors!
What? Maybe it was just a coincidence. He could have just come to watch the court.
There are no coincidences where that man is concerned, Princess. If he was watching you, then you can bet on the colors that he knows exactly who you are and where you came from. And he's probably planning to kill you.
Tungfar laid a hand on her shoulder.
Ah, don't worry, Vivenna. He wants to kill us, too. At least you're in good company.
For the first time in her several weeks at the palace, Ciri stood before the God King's door and felt neither worried nor tired. Bluefingers, oddly, wasn't scribbling on his pad. He watched her silently, expression unreadable. Ciri almost smiled to herself. Gone were the days when she'd had to lie on the floor awkwardly trying to kneel while her back complained. Gone were the days when she had to fall asleep on the marble, her discarded dress her only comfort. Ever since she'd grown daring enough to climb into the bed the previous week, she'd slept well each night, comfortable and warm. And not once had she been touched by the God King. It was a nice arrangement. The priests, apparently satisfied that she was doing her wifely duty, left her alone. She didn't have to be naked in front of anyone, and she was beginning to learn the social dynamic of the palace. She'd even gone to a few more sessions of the court assembly, though she hadn't mingled with the returned.
Vessel, you have found a way to make the king respond to your advances, then?
That got out, did it?
Oh, indeed it did, Vessel. Only those in the palace know about any of this, of course.
Good.
Bluefingers did not look pleased.
What? I'm out of danger. The priest can stop worrying about an heir. For a few months, at least. They'll get suspicious eventually.
Vessel, doing your duty as the vessel was the danger. Oh, gods, oh gods, oh gods.
What?
I shouldn't say.
Then what was the point of bringing it up in the first place? Honestly, Bluefingers, you're getting frustrating. leave me too confused, and I might just start asking questions.
No, Vessel, you must not speak to others of my fears. They're silly, really. Nothing to bother anyone else with, just...
What?
You must not bear him a child. That is the danger, both to yourself and to the God King himself. This all, everything here in the palace, is not what it appears to be.
That's what everyone says. If it's not what it seems, then tell me what it is.
There is no need, and I will not speak of this again. After tonight, you will conduct yourself to the bedchambers. You obviously have the pattern down well enough. Just wait 100 heartbeats or so after the women let you out of the dressing room.
You have to tell me something.
Vessel, I advise you to please keep your voice down. You don't know how many factions shift and move inside the palace. I am a member of many of them, and a stray word on your part could... No, would mean my death. Do you understand that? Can you understand that? I should not be putting my life in danger because of you. But there are things about this arrangement with which I do not agree. And so, I give my warning. Avoid giving the God King a child. If you want to know more than that, read your histories. Honestly, I would think that you'd have come to all this a little more prepared.
And with that, the little man left. Ciri shook her head and pushed open the door and entered the God King's chambers. She then eyed the God King, who watched her, as always, and pulled off her dress, leaving her shift on. Ciri went to the bed and sat down, waiting a few minutes before climbing up on her knees to do her bouncing, moaning act. She varied it sometimes, doing several different rhythms, getting creative. Once she was done, she snuggled down in the blankets and lay back in the pillows to think.
Oh, could Blue Fingers have been any more obscure?
What little Ciri knew of political intrigue told her that people preferred to be subtle. Obscure, even, to protect themselves from implication.
Read your histories.
It seemed an odd suggestion. If the secrets were that visible, then why would they be dangerous? Still, as she thought, she did find herself feeling grateful for Blue Fingers. She couldn't really blame him for his hesitation. He'd probably already endangered himself far more than he should have. Without him, she wouldn't have known she was in danger. In a way, he was the only friend she had in the city. A person like herself. A person drawn in from another country. A country that was overshadowed by beautiful, bold Halandrin. A man who... Her thoughts trailed off. She felt something odd. She opened her eyes. Someone loomed over her in the darkness. Heart thumping. Ciri shuffled backward on the bed, pulling the covers up over her chest. The God King stood in his dark black clothing. For a few moments, Ciri sat with the blankets clutched before her. Now that he stood, she could see even better how heroic he looked. Tall, broad-shouldered like a statue. Human, but of more dramatic proportions, carefully showing more uncertainty than she'd ever expected from a man who had the title of God King, he moved back to the bed. He sat down on its edge. Then he reached to his shirt, pulling it up.
Oh, Ostri! Oh, God, Lord of Colors, this is it! He's finally coming for me!
Ciri couldn't fight off the trembles. She'd convinced herself that she was safe, comfortable. She shouldn't have to go through with this. Not again.
I can't do it. I can't.
The God King pulled out something from underneath his shirt, then let the garment drape back down. Ciri calmed herself, forcing the color back into her hair. The God King laid the object on the bed, and the firelight revealed it to be a book. Ciri immediately thought of the histories Blue Fingers had mentioned, but she quickly discarded the idea. This book, from the title on the spine, was a book of stories for children. The God King let his fingers rest on it. Then, he delicately opened to the first page. the white parchment bent in the force of his biochroma, shooting out prismatic colors. This didn't distort the text, and Ciri carefully inched forward, looking at the words. She looked up at the God King. His face seemed less stiff than usual. He nodded down at the page, then pointed at the first word.
You want me to read this?
The God King nodded.
It says, stories for children.
He turned the book around, looking at it himself. He rubbed his chin in thought. It didn't seem like he was going to bed her. Did he, instead, expect her to read a story to him? She couldn't imagine him asking for something that childish. She looked up at him again. He turned the book around, pointing at the first word. He nodded toward it.
Stories.
He pointed at the word. She looked closely, trying to discern some hidden meaning or mysterious text.
Why don't you just tell me?
He paused, cocking his head. And he opened his mouth.
Oh.
By the waning light of the hearth's fire, Ciri saw something shocking. The God King of Halandrin had no tongue. There was a scar. She could just barely see it if she squinted closely. Something had happened to him. Some terrible accident had ripped it free. Or had it been taken purposefully? Why would anyone remove the tongue of the king himself?
Biochromatic breath. To awaken objects, a person must give a command. Words spoken in a crisp, clear voice, not slurring or mumbling aloud. Or the breath will not function.
The God King looked away suddenly, seeming ashamed. He picked up the book, holding it to his chest, and moved to stand.
No, please.
She reached her hand forward and touched his arm. The God King froze. She immediately pulled her hand back.
I didn't mean to look so disgusted. That wasn't because of your mouth. It was because I was realizing why it must have been done to you.
The God King studied her, then slowly seated himself again. He held himself back far enough that they were not touching, and she did not reach for him again. However, he did carefully, almost reverently, put his book back down on the bed. He opened to the first page again, then looked at her, his eyes pleading.
You can't read, can you?
He shook his head.
That's the secret. The thing that scares Blowfinger so much. You're not king. You're a puppet. A figurehead. You're paraded around by your priests, given a biochromatic aura so strong that it makes people fall to their knees in wonder. Yet they took your tongue so that you couldn't ever use it. And they never taught you to read, lest you learn too much or manage to communicate with others.
He looked away.
All so that they could control you. No wonder Bluefingers is so scared. If they would do that to their own god, then the rest of us are nothing to them.
It made sense now, why they had been so adamant about her not talking to or even kissing the king. It made sense why they would dislike her so much. They were worried about someone spending time alone with the God King, someone who might discover the truth.
I'm sorry.
He shook his head, then met her eyes. There was a strength in them she wouldn't have expected of a man who had been sheltered and isolated, as he must have been. Finally, he looked down, pointing back at the words on the page. The first word, the first letter, actually.
That is the letter Shash. I can teach you them all, if you wish.
The priests were right to be worried.
Thank you.
Warbreaker Part 1 is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2009 by Brandon Sanderson. All rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the Authro and Dragonsteel Entertainment, LLC. Production copyright 2009 by The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. With performances by James Konacek, Ken Jackson, Ren Casey, Elizabeth Jernigan, Colleen Delaney, Tim Getman, Stephen Carpenter, David Coyne, Scott McCormick, Christopher Graybill, Richard Rowan, Mort Shelby, Terrence Aselford, Sonny Lasky, Eric Messner, Tom Simpson, Nanette Savard, Amanda Thickpenny, and Andy Clements. Adapted and directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Featuring original music composed and performed by Dan Smith and Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Warbreaker, be sure to look for R.A. Salvatore's Demon Wars Saga, available now in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for exciting previews.
Giants, including the biggest and ugliest of those big and ugly brutes I have ever seen. Myrdek is called. And even the Powrys, even Koskosio Begulin himself, gives him great respect. His armor is special, I fear, perhaps even magical, for it seems almost to have an inner fire.
Feel me! This is only one human! One puny human! 100 pieces of king's gold! And 10 prisoners to the one that brings me the head of Nightbeard!
You believe this to be a game? Tell me where she is!
You're a wretch! You're calling yourselves men of God, but no good God would approve of your works. You took from me, you thieving wretch, and for that I'll see you pay!
Who's there?
You knew we would come for you.
Your Markwart is an evil man. I call on you now, in the name of the solemn vow of our order, piety, dignity, poverty, to turn against this evil cause, to find again the light.
Don't miss Demon Wars Saga Book 2, The Demon Spirit Part 2. Available now from Graphic Audio.
In those days, there were heroes and villains, and darkness walked the earth. There were dragons to be slain, captured princesses to be saved, and mighty deeds to be accomplished by knights in shining armor.
Go forth and slay a dragon, my son.
Sounds so easy when you say it. Sounds even easier when those bloody minstrels sing about it.
Robert.
We're being watched, right?
Right.
What do you want from me?
I'm looking for a dragon.
To start with, you've got to pass clean through the Darkwood and out the other side. And there's damn few have done that and lived to tell it. Deep in the Darkwood, something is stirring. Something awful!
I can take care of myself.
Hideous monster! I, Prince Rupert of the Forest Kingdom, do hereby challenge ye! Come forth and fight!
You're a prince, you said?
Yes.
Do you by any chance rescue princesses? I've got one here, and she's driving me crazy.
You're holding a princess captive?
Shh! Keep your voice down. She'll hear you. I'm not holding her captive. I'll be glad to see the back of her.
What's wrong with her?
Dragon!
That's what's wrong with her.
Hello, Prince...
Oh, my hero! You've come to rescue me!
Well, that's partly...
I knew you'd come!
Well, yes, glad to be of service.
Now get on with it.
Get on with what?
With killing the dragon, of course. That's what you're here for, isn't it?
Ah, well, the dragon and I have talked it over, and I'm going to take him back to my castle alive. And you too, of course. Princess Julia, you have two choices. Come back to my castle with me and the dragon, or stay here on your own.
You can't leave me here!
Watch me.
You're the worst prince ever!
Well, I see you've already got something in common with my father.
Prince Rupert? Princess Julia? Approach the throne. Rupert, can't you do anything right?
Not much. Sorry, I couldn't oblige you by getting killed during the quest.
Your Majesty, we do have a serious problem to discuss. Time is running out, Your Majesty. We've already lost three of the outlying villages to the demons, and every day more of the forest falls under the shadow of the Long Night. Demons run ahead of the Darkwood, slaughtering all in their path. We must make a stand against the darkness, while we still can.
Once in a blue moon, magic is loosed in the world. Wild magic. To create or destroy, strong enough to reshape reality itself on the night the blue moon is full. We have 7 months until that night. 7 months in which to find an answer to the darkness. If we fail, the Darkwood will spread over all that is. Civilization will fall. The Long Night will have no ending. And the world will belong to the demons. Prince Rupert, you must journey to the Dark Tower and there summon the High Warlock.
And the High Warlock's our only hope against the Darkwood?
Looks like it.
Then we're in deep trouble.
It's a hard, bloody journey to the Dark Tower, my friends. And you'll be facing the worst odds of your career. Most of you won't be coming back. If we make it, they'll sing songs about us forever. Everybody, run! Now!
Rupert, what in the world did... We're not going to make it outside, sire. We have to stand and fight.
It'll kill us!
If you've a better idea, I'm open to suggestions.
Even as we speak, my champion and my younger son, Prince Rupert, are on their way to summon the High Warlock, that he may return to the forest land and set his sorceries against the darkness.
You'd bring him back? After what he did?
Desperate situations call for desperate remedies. I have therefore decided also to reopen the old armory and draw the katana from its scabbard.
The sword of compulsion has been forbidden to your majesty's line for over 4 centuries.
The situation has changed since then.
A king rules by the consent of his people, not because he has a magic sword that compels their obedience. Do you think the barons will stand idly by while you employ such power?
Many tales are told of that time. Tales of steadfast bravery and daring do.
Unicorn, you'd better find a tree to hide behind and stay clear of the fight. I don't want you getting hurt.
Oi, we're ahead of you, Rupert!
Don't just stand there. Get him, lads!
He's got a sword, boss.
A big sword.
And look at those scars on his face. And there was all that dried blood on his armor. He must have slaughtered hundreds of people.
Stop messing about and kill the traveler!
You want him dead, you kill him!
This is not one of those tales.
At least get his horse.
Horse! I'm a unicorn!
Horse, unicorn, what's the difference?
I'll be afraid later when there's time. Oh, I'll line up the creeps for me, and I'll skewer the lot of them. I'll show them a shish kebab they won't forget in a hurry.
Did you really think you could threaten me in my own court and get away with it? You're a fool, Sir Bedivere, and I do not suffer fools gladly. Bow your head to me or lose it.
You dare laugh? We're running out of time. There's a blue moon rising.
The dark will not take me this night!
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Forest Kingdom Saga, Blue Moon Rising, Part 1. Thank you.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.